Slug's print edition streets the first Friday of every month. Find it any place cool or online. More information available at slugmag.com.
Shh. Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves. I'm Ryan Fedor. I play guitar and sing in Tolchok Trio. I also play in Salt Lake Electric Ensemble, Payout Beast, 6335, also known as Bees, and Future of the Ghost. Other members of Tolchok Trio are Dan Thomas, who plays drums, Oliver Lewis, who plays bass, guitar, and sings, and Tommy Nguyen, who plays guitar and bass. We're playing August 4th at Urban Lounge with Palace of Buddies and 90s Television. We've got this batch of demos from an album that we were working on and never finished, and we've decided to release some of these demos just to the public as something to give them. My wife at one point came to me and said, "Don't plan anything for the nights of August 4th and August 5th. And I said, "Okay." And obviously I know that's my own birthday, so I assumed we were going to go to a hotel or something. And then probably a month later, she says, "You know, I have something I have to tell you." I'm like, "Okay." And she says, "I have booked a Tolchok show for you as a surprise." And since we had been broken up, you know, 4 years, I was just kind of like, what? And she had contacted all the other members of the band and Will Sartain and booked the night already, and they had all agreed to do it. And the original plan was that they were going to go to a show on August 4th, and I was going to be there, and then all of a sudden the band would be like, "Hey, you're here. Cool, let's play." And then at some point, I guess she finally realized, oh, that would be a terrible idea, because obviously we wouldn't have practiced together, and who knows if we remember any of the songs. So I had a lot of, I guess, mixed feelings. I wasn't sure if we were ever going to play again or if I wanted to play again. But as it's happened, I feel a lot better about it. We've been playing together. It's brought back a lot of good feelings. It's really great to play with, like, Oliver especially. Me and Oliver have been playing music for probably close to 20 years now. So Dan lives in LA, and because of this, me and Tommy and Oliver are pretty much practicing on our own, and then I believe Dan is flying into town on August 1st. We're going to cram a couple practices if everybody can get work off, so we're hoping that muscle memory kind of kicks back in. There was a few parts here and there we had to kind of relearn and listen to our own album and, like, figure it out a little bit, but even songs that, like, we wrote 10, 12 years ago that we hadn't played in so long, and I was surprised that they came right back, so that was encouraging. We formed roughly in about year 2000. I had been playing in a group with Oliver called St. Ryan's Lament, and then at some point, Oliver said, "Hey, I have this friend, Dan Thomas, who lives in Minneapolis, and he's going to be moving out here. Do you want to start this band? And I want the band to be called Tolchok Trio." And I was like, "Okay, I guess." I should mention Dave Payne. Dave's going to be playing keyboards for us. We basically have been playing as a five-piece for a while with Dave on keyboards. Dave's goal in life is basically to play in every band in Salt Lake. He stated that to me. There was one point where he was like in 30 bands. And so if I didn't mention Dave, he'd be very mad. So I'm just going to mention Dave and say that he's great. Tolchok comes from the book A Clockwork Orange, and in it, it means to hit or to strike. And then later on, we were at a show, and there was this Russian guy there, and he was like, "Do you guys know what Tolchok means?" And we're like, "Yeah, we know what it means. It's from A Clockwork Orange." And he's like, No. "It's prison slang. It's a prison toilet."
Wow.
So 2000-ish, we start playing. We have this really crummy basement that we actually sort of play in. We decide to start playing out in the scene. We've been attending shows at Kilby Court, like, on and off before it was even legal to have shows there, when it used to be like, bring your own booze. And then it kind of became a legit venue. And at some point during it, we decided, okay, we're ready to play a show there. So we got booked there with this band called Starlight Mints, and that was our first show. And then at some point, we discovered this club called Ya Butts, which is Ya and then a little mark and then B-U-T-S, Ya Butts. Like, yeah, but the worst. we ended up sort of making friends with Mike Sartain, who was booking shows at Yawbutz. And then we started playing these shows at Yawbutz with other bands like Red Bennies and the Wolves and I think like Thunderfist. I thought it was really cool. It was this kind of Soundgarden type thing. But we were seeing these noisy Salt Lake City bands and we were really into it. And it seemed like the type of thing that we could fit into. Another band I should mention back then is Alchemy. Alchemy had a kid named Jeremy Smith, and Jeremy Smith played guitar for them, and he became one of my friends. And then Jeremy actually ended up being the one who recorded our first album, Hello Bird. And then at some point as we went along, we actually asked Jeremy to join Tolchok as well. He played parts on both of our first two albums. I always think of Jeremy as like this like spirit animal. He was just so smooth and could play anything you wanted, and he had such a good ear for engineering and recording too. Like, he had crummy gear, and it was amazing what he could pull out of this crummy gear, because he had such an attention to detail and he was just so careful in his mixing. I learned a lot from him. He was really thorough. When we first started this band, we kind of had a mission statement, which might be weird, but our initial mission statement was My Bloody Valentine meets Wilco, which is totally weird because those two don't seem to go together at all. And this was before, actually, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot had come out. So it was like kind of the country-ish Wilco. So we kind of wanted this sort of textural, droney thing, but with bits of like country bends and country licks and sort of a folky thing. Neil Young, too. I mean, I always felt like Neil Young's voice, it related to me because I sing in a similar range, that kind of thin, nasally. At least I did back then. I've kind of been able to fill my voice out a bit now, but I always felt like it's fit in the same range. We were kind of doing this like country My Bloody Valentine thing, and that was the goal. There's probably only one or two tracks where we ever actually succeeded in that goal, but that was like the initial idea. And then we started hearing other bands that started to kind of influence us. First time we heard Blonde Redhead, which I wore the shirt of today to remind myself to mention them, and they kind of blew our mind. We were already Sonic Youth fans, and I remember seeing this clip of Blonde Redhead. This clip was insane. This crazy bass part, and the lead singer Kazu is just screeching. She's just screeching over this crazy bass part for like a minute and a half, and it was so cool and so inspiring. And I remember I immediately went and wrote a Blonde Redhead ripoff song. We're going to play it at the show, actually. It's called Treble Five. The Pixies, we've been called on that before, too, and it's true. Love the Pixies. We've always tried to kind of, I guess, embrace that sort of abrasive pop that the Pixies put out. It was so noisy, and his lyrics were so abrasive, and his voice could be so abrasive, but then there was just these golden gems of pop songs within, and we always found that really inspiring. And then somewhere in there, too, Dan played me some bands I had never heard. Bands like Built to Spill, Modest Mouse, Bright Eyes, this band from Minneapolis called Lifter Puller, who I believe became the Hold Steady. It really hit, I think, all of us at the time, so there was a period there during that first album especially where we were like really into that kind of like so-called indie scene. It's a very weird album, that first one. I guess we were still finding our voice. We were still finding who we were. But I remember reading a review that basically said the exact thing, and I was like, yeah, you nailed it. Like, it was like, this is a very eclectic album, a band searching for their sound. And I was like, that's pretty much it. Like, we haven't found it. They were like, but don't write it off. And I was like, thank you. At some point, we like got over it. I'd say that the second album, pretty much, we were like, we gotta move past that. And that's more when we went to like the kind of Pixies, Sonic Youth type thing. Tolchok has always kind of had an attitude. We've always feel like we wanted to be a little bit provocative, sometimes to the point where it's probably a detriment, where we were okay with playing very noisy or very droney for a long time, because that's what we like. I remember this time we played a City Weekly best of party. It's going pretty well. They put us on last for the headliner. And we basically had a goal. We're going to play our songs, play, you know, six or seven songs. And then we're like, well, at the end, we're just going to clear this place out. And so we went into one of our songs that's just basically this like 15-minute barrage of noise. And yeah, it worked. People just cleared out. And then you had some diehards up front just, you know, standing in front of the speaker just like soaking it all in the noise and just loving it. But yeah, most of those industry people, like, they want safe music. We like playing that role where we were a provocateur, and it always kind of worked for us. And I guess that came from bands like Sonic Youth and Blonde Redhead, where they were okay with that. They were okay with being noisy and confrontational. You know, you might go to a Sonic Youth show and you might see them play similar, more pop songs, or you might go to a show and they might just play Feedback for a while. We always liked that you didn't know what you were going to get. To me, that's exciting. That's exciting about music. When I hear about bands who are established that do that, I always respect it. When I hear that, you know, I went to see this band and I thought they were going to play their hits, and then they did this weird thing and they played this 20-minute long cover, and I'm so mad. And I'm just like, why are you mad? You got to see something so cool that nobody else will probably ever get to see, because it was probably a one-off. And you can say that for the rest of your life. Oh, I got to see, you know, Band X play this 20-minute long cover of Sister Ray by the Velvet Underground, and it was amazing. A lot of people don't see it that way, but we always thought it was an interesting way to give people something unique. So over the years, we've played a few shows that stand out. One of the ones that stands out the most is probably, I consider, the biggest deal for me, was when we opened for this band called The Fall, who are a British band who have been around since the late 70s. It's this guy, Marky Smith. He's had probably 50 different versions of the band. He has a very famous quote. He says, "If it's me and your granny on bongos, it's The Fall." Basically, he's The Fall. And so he's always changing the band. He's a legend. He kind of comes from that sort of the Bob Dylan, Lou Reed, and then the Modern Lovers school. We love them. Like, they're such an amazing band, and they put out a record like every 6 months. It's so prolific. And we got to open up for them at the Depot. It was pretty much a dream come true. Like, to this day, I can't believe we did it. It just seems like insane. A fascinating story behind this, too, is that Marky Smith is notoriously difficult to work with. And right, I think it was 2 or 3 days before the show in Salt Lake, his band quit on stage, and one of the members had a banana, and he threw the banana peel in Marky Smith's face, and then they all walked off the stage except for Marky Smith and his wife. Some of the shows we played that were cool, we got asked to open for Weezer. Super bizarre surprise. Weezer was touring here. They were playing with Angels and Airwaves and this band called Tokyo Police Club. And Tokyo Police Club, I guess, ended up having a video shoot or something that they had to do on this day. And so they had to drop off the show. And Lance Saunders of Sartain and Saunders called me, and he was just like, "Hey, you won't believe this, but can you guys open for Weezer?" And it was like in 2 days, too. It was like immediately. And I was like, "What?" It's going to be the E-Center, too, which is crazy. So I'm like, "Well, let me ask everybody." Everybody immediately was like, "Yes." We grew up being such big Weezer fans. Those first two albums are just as good as anything that's ever been released ever, in my opinion. We were able to get our friend Scott Selfridge to actually run sound on their giant board. And then we also got my friend Brian Van Claveren to be our guitar tech. It was so cool. Like, having Scott up there running the board was just the best thing, because he was the one who was recording our album, and everything sounded flawless. And it just sounded so good, and we sounded enormous. Like, at least we felt like we sounded enormous after the show was done. I remember he said, too, he was like, "You guys sounded bigger than Angels and Airwaves." After we released our album, Abalone Skeleton, I think that was 2008, kind of had stopped touring. It became hard for us. So naturally, we kind of started to slow down. And then we kind of got into this funk where we were playing shows all the time, but there was little to no purpose. It felt like here's another show, another weekend. And so I think we took a break for a bit. We were kind of stopped playing shows. And then we all started kind of getting busier. Dan started playing in this band with Josh Payne. And so we kind of started doing other things. And in the middle there, we started recording some stuff, and we never kind of got way into it. We were we'd meet every couple weeks, and we'd mess around for 6 hours and get one guitar part recorded. And then at some point, Dan was basically just like, "Hey, just so you guys know, I'm moving to L.A. And that basically is what kind of stopped the band. We never officially even said, "We're done." We played a last show, and we kind of were like, "Last show." And then for a while there, I was okay with it. I was okay with the band being done, because we had sort of gotten so stagnant. I guess that's what's interesting about this show is that it really has been in like the last 6 months where I have kind of felt this like longing to play these songs again. Like I actually went and, you know, 5 or 6 months ago, I went and dug out these old songs that we'd unfinished, and I was looking at them, and I was kind of talking with Oliver, and I was like, hey, you ever think we could finish these songs, or do you think we could work on these songs? He was like, yeah, maybe. And I was like, well, and it never really kind of went anywhere, but we were like at least talking about it, and I'd run into Tommy, and Tommy would be like, we should play a show. I was like, yeah, but how? I guess that's what's really interesting about the time frame that this happened when they surprised me with the show is that I actually was genuinely in a place where it was pulling at me, where I wanted to play the show. I don't know if it's like the fear of the end of the world or you're just like, I have to love my friends. I have to like love people. I have to remember the good times and like push out the hate and the bullshit and just, I don't know, be with your family and friends. It kind of makes me want to continue to like do something with those guys in the future, even if Tolchok doesn't continue on from this point. As for the reunion show, instead of like doing the like a noise blast type thing that we might have done in the past, where we're just kind of did what we want, we kind of did the same thing in our last show. We sort of played a greatest hits. We actually worked pretty hard to be like, what does everybody want to hear? And just to go out with a bang, and I think we're going to do the exact same thing. We're going to probably play just about everything that anybody has ever said was one of their favorites. So we just released a 3-song demo. The working title was called Monoculture. Monoculture is basically a practice of farming where you plant one type of plant repeatedly over and over. It's really not a very good practice. It tends to like lead to disease and the soil gets depleted. But it also applies to other things in life. Like a monoculture is like when something is just the same over and over. It's the same thing. Part of that name is just that obviously it's a bit of a planet. This album's not just one thing. We also mixed the album in mono, which is a very nerdy thing, but that was part of it. It's basically just going to be available on Bandcamp, digital only. We're not doing any CDs or anything. So the name of the 3 songs are After Dinner, Gloom in the Room, and then 2020s. The song we'll be playing is called Gloom in the Room. It's actually a love song I wrote to my wife when we were actually having like some difficulties. It's a love song, and then I had written it to sort of like solidify my feelings for her, but at the time we were breaking up. So it's got this terribly depressing title, but it's like it's a love song. So that's the song we'll be playing. So we're playing at Urban Lounge on August 4th. It's a club, 21 and over. $5. We're playing with 90s Television and Palace of Buddies, which we're pretty excited about it.
No plans this weekend? Hit up Slug Magazine's daily calendar and never have another Friday night in.